You're listening to the Mindful Weight Loss Podcast, episode 55.
It's time to look at weight loss in a whole new way. Instead of focusing on calories in, calories out, you'll learn how to use your brain to transform your body and heal your relationship with food. If you're ready to lose your weight for the last time, you're in the right place. Because it's more than what you eat, it's who you are when you're eating. This is the Mindful Weight Loss Podcast. Here's your host, life and weight loss coach, Dr. Michelle Tupman.
Welcome to the podcast. This week, we're talking nutrition coaching. And I think this is a really important distinction to make because frequently on this podcast, we're talking about mindset. We're talking about managing your emotions. We're talking about all of these life skills that you need to master if you want to be successful on your weight loss journey, or in fact, successful in reaching any goals that you might have related to health. And I think it's important that we also talk about the nutrition side of things because it is still important. And to that end, I'm joined on the podcast today by Jolene Hermanson. She is a nutrition coach and a mindset coach. And we had all the intentions in the world of talking about nutrition, but our conversation quickly evolved into talking about mindset and the brain and all the ways the brain likes to get in the way of us actually doing the nutrition piece of things. And I think this really just goes to show how crucial the mindset and the brain aspects to weight loss and health are. And in fact, we get so into all of the analogies. You're going to learn about how your brain is like a pickle. You're going to learn about what happens when a rogue wave hits you on your journey. And you're going to learn how weight loss and health goals are really like a ball going down the lane in a bowling alley. And so this discussion with Jolene is full of so many useful nuggets, and I cannot wait to get to it. Now, Jolene is a Precision Nutrition Level 2 Certified Nutrition and Mindset Coach, and she's a wife and a mama of a 5-year-old boy and a 3-year-old girl. She's been on both sides of the health pendulum, from apathetic to anxious, and she knows now that peace lies in building skill sets you practice and learn to master over time. She primarily helps women who work out, but who aren't getting the results they're looking for, break away from all or nothing thinking and tracking precise calories and macronutrients. She teaches them instead how to use a combination of both external and internal guidelines to reach their goals. She explores their strengths, values, and body knowledge with them and uses those things to build success. Success from within helps them to increase their consistency, create food peace, and decrease their cravings. And so without any further delay, here is the interview with Jolene Hermanson. Jolene, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
So I'm very excited to have you here because number one, you're Canadian just like me, and I don't get the opportunity to interview Canadians very often. So I'm already happy about that. And we also have similar background in terms of training. We've both trained with Precision Nutrition, which was just such an excellent program for us to learn, you know, basics about nutrition and coaching nutrition in particular. But we've taken different approaches with this, I think. So I would love to hear how you came to be a nutrition coach and what your story behind all of that is.
Yeah. So I became a nutrition coach. I think it would have been when I first got certified with them in 2020. I think it was during the pandemic, actually. I used that time to like get certified lift level one. And the reason why I did that was, I think I was always sort of, my original career is in geology and earth sciences. And I have a master's of science in hydrogeology and geochemistry. And one of the things I was really felt like I was missing in that job was was the human connection. So I was working on a lot of projects with science-based in earth sciences, but I felt like I was always missing, just there was something not quite there that I was missing. So when I learned about Precision Nutrition and I saw the way their coaching philosophy on deep health and coaching of the whole person, not just like macros and calories, it really resonated with me. And another reason it really resonated with me was because I had recently been going through learning a lot about dementia. My father has early onset dementia. And working a lot in learning about why that would happen to somebody and all of the different lifestyle and nutrition and stress-based factors. So that was weighing very heavy on me when I learned about PN. And so that deep health coaching really just hit me, and I really wanted to learn about it and dig into it, and didn't know if it would go anywhere, like career-wise. I just really wanted to learn about it. And so then as I went through it, the level one is very science-based. It's all about the nutrition science, and a little, it gets a little bit into coaching. But then I learned that level two was really all about coaching and like the psychology behind change and the psychology behind coaching and that coaching relationship. So then I signed up for level two, which at that time was a year-long program. And it really, really, really aligned well with what we had talked about before this call was life coaching and the just the I think more of the social psychology behind change. And so anyways, that really is where I put a lot of my focus now on with my clients, is in more of a deep health and trying to almost help them. A lot of my clients are women who have spent a lot of time calorie counting, macro counting, all or nothing mindset, very like a lot of stress and anxiety around food, around their body, helping them to bridge into more of an intuitive based approach, but also having some structure when it comes to macros so that they're not, they feel like they've got that structure and boundary, but they're also learning the intuitive skills to kind of bridge that gap. And I just, what I love to see is women go from that sort of stressed and like controlling and worried state to a more very peaceful, calm, and in control, and not even really worrying about food, so that they can worry about bigger things in their lives.
Right. Yeah. And I've never named precision nutrition specifically, but I have told the story of how I came to coaching on this podcast many times. And it was precision nutrition that changed everything for me. So mm-hmm. I'm a woman who I've struggled since my teen years with my weight, been mm-hmm. on every diet out there. I've done Weight Watchers 7 times. Like it's just, I've always been counting something and being very miserable doing it. And right. I discovered Precision Nutrition's coaching program many, many years ago. And so I did, I think, 3 rounds of it as a client. And the first 2 rounds that I did, I actually never engaged in the coaching piece of it. I just sopped up all of the information that they gave me in terms of the nutrition, you know, part of it, and then tried to make my counting better. And so I never even finished either of those 2 rounds because it just felt like the same thing that I was always doing. And then when I signed up for the 3rd time, I decided I'm just going to go all in. I'm going to do everything they offer me. And I took my one-to-one sessions with the coach that they offered. And that is who introduced me to this concept of deep health. And I thought, oh my, okay, there is something to this. So I went ahead and did certification in level 1 of precision nutrition for my own benefit, never having the intention of becoming a coach myself. I just wanted to learn more about what my PN coach had taught me. And I got so interested in that concept of deep health that I went out looking elsewhere for other types of coaching. And that's what led me to Brooke Castillo and the Life Coach School. And so that's the journey that kind of brought me to where I am now. And I think that was the first time I had ever heard of weight loss or just eating for health to be more than just about the macros and more than just about the food, that there was this whole other human behind what we eat that we had to look at if we wanted to embrace a healthy lifestyle. And so, you know, precision nutrition was really the thing that turned everything around for me. Eternally grateful for that. And it's the story of your father resonates with me as well. And, you know, my dad passed away just the year before COVID and he had cancer, but was a perfectly healthy guy on no medications before all of that. And it all just kind of hit very quickly. And it, you know, I think when that happens to a parent, you worry about your own future and, you know, what's in store for you in terms of your life and your health risks. But you also learn just how precious life is, and that desire to actually be healthy and take care of yourself in the best way possible. And also to, you know, maybe take a look at where your balance are, you know, in terms of work and everything else, and prioritize the things that are actually really important to you. So I think, I think when these big events happen, in our lives, they're often a point for us to pivot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, I had my own, you know, food and body image things since I had been a teenager. And I had gone through kind of like, I call it that pendulum, where when I was a teenager, I think I worked at McDonald's. I had, you know, gained a bunch of weight. I was very sedentary, and that wasn't who I was inside. That wasn't how I identified, but somehow I had become, through my behaviors, I'd become this person that I didn't recognize anymore. And then in university, that switched, and I said, you know, this is it. I'm done. I'm going to become an athlete again. And I started running and running and running and running, and I dropped a whole bunch of weight, but I didn't understand the nutrition piece. Like, I had no knowledge of nutrition or any of the skills that PN teaches, the fundamental skills of deep health. I didn't know any of that. So it was a very unhealthy way for me to, like, you know, lose weight. And I was trying to sort of gain control, but in like a very restricted way. And so then when I wasn't able to run so much because I actually had responsibilities and like a job and everything else, it caused this deep anxiety in me that I couldn't exercise it off anymore. And I didn't understand that actually it was the nutrition that was the thing. And like, and the reason why I couldn't control my nutrition was because I was undernourished in mostly protein and vegetables. Like, I wasn't eating enough of those things. So that caused my anxiety to be worse. Like my physiological body, like my body was like depleted. And then also, because I didn't understand the emotional regulation piece, I was sort of like using food to help me through that. And it was this like back and forth, like restriction and then like eating too much and then restriction and eating too much. And I didn't understand what was happening. And I think I eventually did get, you know, some knowledge and control over that. But when I learned about PN, I was like, oh, it's just skills. It's just skills that I didn't realize I was incompetent in. And then I started to practice these skills, and I realized it, like, the nutrition piece is one skill set, but there's all these other skills that I then was able to practice myself and get better at. And that has helped, like, similar to you, that's helped me immensely in building skills that I didn't even realize I wasn't competent in.
Yeah. And I think that's the case for so many women, is they just don't know what they don't know. Yeah. Right.
They think it's a diet thing. They think it's like a magic diet.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and it totally makes sense, right? Because if you want to lose weight or build muscle or, you know, whatever your goal is, the first thing that you think about is food, and you stop there. Right. And unless somebody tells you that there's so much more to this than just the food, but then the food is also a part of it. And I find like that is one of the biggest challenges in coaching weight loss specifically, is that we kind of have to untangle all of that stuff. And that I want to teach the nutrition so that people are eating in a healthful way for themselves, but without encouraging all of the counting and, you know, demonizing food groups and, you know, all of the other things that, you know, the quote unquote diet culture has taught women to do all of these years, and encourage them to really start to look at all of the other stuff, the sleep, the stress management, the emotional regulation, the, you know, time management, even in lots of cases, like all of these other things are, if not more important, then at least foundational to put into place all of the stuff that, all of the nutritional stuff that you need to do to lose weight or be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think when we, when you talked about like when something happens like that to a parent or to anybody you love, and you kind of zoom out and you're like looking at it forces you to look at the big picture of life. And I think what can happen to a lot of us, especially as women, is we're very zoomed in. We're very like focused on, you know, do carrots have too many carbs? Am I allowed to eat this bread? Like that's very zoomed in. And so when we're like that, it causes a lot of stress and pressure because we're stuck in the weeds. Yeah. And so when we zoom out to look at our deep health and our life as a whole and how our behaviors of eating are showing up in like the way we're eating is the way we look at life in a way. Mm-hmm. And so when we zoom out like that and look at what you'd said, like at how we're working, how we're dealing with stress, that's I think when we can actually start to fix those things. And then the eating kind of follows it, because the eating is just the way we're eating is just a symptom of a lot of those other things.
Agree completely. On. Yeah, agree completely. And I think many women, when they step back and look at their nutritional lives as a whole, they can see, like they know what eating healthy is and what it isn't, right? Like, I don't think I've ever met a woman who didn't know that you should be eating vegetables, that vegetables is a part of a healthy diet, right? Mm-hmm. And yet they don't do it, because when you're stressed out, do you crave vegetables? No, right? You know, if you're emotionally exhausted, do you eat vegetables to make yourself feel better? No, right? If you're not sleeping and you're eating to keep yourself awake all day, is it vegetables you turn to? No, right? Mm-hmm. So all of these things, you know, definitely, you know, come together for all of this. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, totally. That, like Brooke talks about it, right? Like when we're stressed, that our primal body kicks up, and it's like, it's going to take control. And I love the analogy that it's not PN, it's another, I can't remember the authors of the book, but they have the analogy of the elephant and the rider, where the rider is that's our prefrontal cortex, and the elephant's our primal brain, our primal body that has these deep needs and desires. And when, as the rider, we're just trying to jerk the elephant where we want it to go, it's going to rebel. It's going to do the things that we don't want it to do. So it's a lot of it is just about, I think, reestablishing like that connection with our body, with our, what's happening for us, like mentally, emotionally, physically, like really noticing and paying attention, rather than just trying to buffer it and make it go away by eating.
Exactly. And I think, I think one of the greatest challenges is that women don't understand that they're buffering, or that they're using food to anesthetize uncomfortable things, because we just get into this habit. We do it for so long that it becomes second nature, right? It's this total primitive brain driven response, and we don't even know that it's happening. And so one of what my work is in coaching women is to teach them exactly what you just said, to teach them how to reconnect their mind and body so that they can, you know, first of all, have some awareness of what's actually going on when they're reaching for the wine or reaching for the Doritos or, you know, the ice cream or whatever it is. And then understanding that, you know, you do have this prefrontal cortex, right? You do have this other brain system that you can recruit to come be in charge of these decisions. It doesn't have to be the primitive brain all of the time. But until you're actually aware of what is going on with that primitive brain and what your you know, habitual instincts are around food, it's very difficult to change any of it. And like, I think this is why 90-95% of, you know, traditional diets fail, right? It's because you don't change these patterns in your brain. And so as soon as you stop whatever diet you've bought into, or as soon as life gets hard, you just default back to your old patterns, and your weight comes back on again. So unless you change those instinctual ways of reaching for food, you won't have lasting weight loss.
Yeah. 100%. I have, also experienced recently too, where clients have made, like, I work with clients one-on-one right now, and have made like really amazing progress. And we talk a lot about like cravings and the, like, how we can try to manage cravings by what we're eating, like adding more food that we to help us reduce cravings, but the cravings will still come up. So I have, like, I help them with tools about like processing those uncomfortable feelings, uncomfortable emotions, basically like navigating through that and being like a narrator, so to speak, like, so that you're really watching and talking about what's happening in your body. And I've had a client who went from like constantly having cravings at night to now it's been 3 months and she doesn't get them, but had a time recently where all of a sudden she was kind of caught herself mindlessly eating again. And she was very disappointed in herself because it had really been like 3 months since that had happened. And her issue, I guess, with like forgiving herself for it was she was worried that if she forgave herself, that was a free pass ticket to keep doing it. And so one of the other things, you know, is talking to clients about how this is a practice, and that it's, the analogy I used was like a surfer. So, you know, a surfer that you want to learn how to surf. So you spend like 3 months, you're learning how to like get up on the waves. You're learning how to like read the waves. You're learning, you're doing really well. You're surfing most of the waves you can get up on. All of a sudden a rogue wave comes and knocks you over, and you, like, the board hits you in the head and you end up with a mouthful of sand. Is that surfer going to say, oh, okay, like, I can't surf anymore, I might as well just give up and go sit on the beach? Like, no, the surfer is going to be like, well, that was a rogue wave. And maybe if they take it further, they might be like, was there any indication that that wave was coming? Like, did I really not know it was coming? If I had been really looking, and was there any warning signs ahead of time that I could have looked for? And so, and maybe not, maybe there wasn't, but then they just keep getting up and keep practicing. It doesn't mean anything about their skill level necessarily as a surfer, just that they're going to continue to like learn from it if they can, and then get back up and keep practicing. So it's like that skill of self-compassion where you're not letting yourself off the hook. There's still boundaries that you want to create for yourself, but at the same time being kind and understanding that it's just part of the practice.
It was. So I agree with that so much. And what I often tell people is that it is not how well you adhere to whatever protocol of eating you've given to yourself. It's how well you're able to forgive yourself when you eat something off plan or you eat something that you didn't want to and get back at it. Because this is what happens, is you hit a rogue wave, right? And then you beat up on yourself and you quit, right? Yeah. And so understanding that this is just going to happen. And I heard an analogy recently that's maybe a little weird, but it actually makes sense. And this guy was talking about cucumbers and pickles, and saying that, you know, once you pickle a cucumber, you can't ever turn it back into a cucumber. It's going to be a pickle forever. And so he was using this to describe, like, once you have a habit burned into your primitive brain. So, you know, I don't know, reaching for ice cream when you're anxious, for instance, once you've done that, you've turned the pickle, or you've turned the cucumber into the pickle, so that it's always going to be there. And so even if you are, you know, if it's been 20 years, not just, you know, 3 months of not having, you know, nighttime snacking or whatever, but it's 20 years, every once in a while, you're still going to get that urge, right? If you talk to smokers, you know, they'll still every once in a while out of the blue just get this urge for a cigarette, even if they quit 20 years ago. And that's just because that part of your brain has been pickled and you can't unpickle it. But what we can do is create more pickles in different parts of our brain that are even more pickly than the original ones. And like that analogy helps people sometimes because it makes them understand that they haven't done anything wrong if they get a craving and eat. It's just literally what their brains do. And once they understand that it's just going to happen from time to time, you're going to hit a rogue wave, right? then it's easier, I think, to just wipe the slate clean and get back at it. I think it's easier to find self-compassion when you can understand, you know, that this is just the way brains work. It's not my fault. So I love that analogy of the pickle and the cucumber.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've never heard that before. I love it.
I was listening to some podcast somewhere and he said it initially and I'm like, what? And then he kept talking about it and I'm like, oh, you know what? This makes sense. So I've noticed like in my own life, like there's specific times when I get cravings for certain foods and I just say, oh, it's my pickles. And like, it totally calms me down.
So when you like get those cravings and you don't make it mean anything about you as a person, but you're just like, that's just the pickle. Does it help you? Like, do you then find it's easier for you to allow that urge to be there and move through it? Or do you find you're like, I'm going to eat the thing I want?
No, it totally does help me. And I love that language of allowing the urge, because that's exactly what we teach people to do in programs at WEZA, is allow the urge, is to just sit with that uncomfortable feeling of wanting the food and exploring that a little bit. And as soon as I say, oh, that's my pickle, it's like it settles me into it, and I can look at that with curiosity. And it usually takes mere seconds for me to understand what's going on and my craving passes. Like literally seconds. Like I did this last night. My husband and I went to see the new Top Gun movie, which is absolutely fabulous, by the way.
What?
Highly recommend.
I did not know. Yeah.
So good.
Top Gun. Okay.
So good. Yeah. No, it's maybe even better than the first. It was so good.
What?
We came home and it was late, and I allowed myself to have some popcorn at the movies, which I really don't do, you know, very often. But we had decided ahead of time to make an event out of this. And when I start eating like junk food like that, I tend to get cravings for more. And so we get home and I'm super tired. I'm already getting stressed out because like today's really busy and we have a flight coming and, you know, all of this stuff. And so I had this combination of just having popcorn, which tends to set me off, being totally exhausted, which is also a trigger for me, and being stressed about, you know, the next day. So I had these three things, and all I could think about was chocolate cake. And I was like so close to saying to my husband, you got to go find me some somewhere, honey. And then I realized, oh, you know, these are my pickles, right? And then it was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to sit with this. It makes total sense why I'm having these cravings. This is what I've always done. And I, within 30 seconds, it was
That's
gone.
Amazing.
I had a glass of water. I went to bed and it was totally fine. And it started with me saying like, these are my pickles. Or like, I mean, saying like, it's a rogue wave, like that would work for me as
well. What you're doing is that practice in PN where they talk about noticing and naming.
Yeah,
like you've named, you've labeled it as your pickle.
Yeah.
And that, but I think that even I really like that analogy, because it even brings up an image of me, of my brain, literally like the neurons in there, like whatever pathways are in there, like the pickled part of it.
Right.
I really like that.
I like that too.
And that's really also an example of the compassion, where you're like, oh yeah, that makes total sense that I want, of course I want chocolate cake right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And
I swear, like a year ago, this would have been me beating myself up. It's like, what's wrong with you? Like, you don't want chocolate. Why are you wanting chocolate? Like, and like this, you know, berating myself, you know, sort of thing. And it is so impossible to allow an urge if you're beating yourself up for having it.
Right. Well, then you're really just resisting it, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which I think is what a lot of people think that allowing an urge is like, okay, I'm just going to let it happen and then it should be gone. But that's not really allowing it. It's resisting it.
No. And when you resist it, the craving just gets worse.
Yeah.
Right. I've been there a million times. Like that's another one of my pickles, is resisting urges. Right. So, it's, you just get into this cycle.
Yeah.
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 No, it's, that very cool. I'm going to use that one.
I think it actually came from, addictions literature originally.
Okay.
But I think the analogy works in this instance as well, is that, you know, you can't undo the neural connections you have in your brain. They're just always going to be there, but you can build other ones that are stronger. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I love that.
I love it. I love it too.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing you mentioned also is, like, I just want to go back to this idea of beating yourself up when you do something that you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, one of the things that we always encourage, and I think Precision Nutrition teaches this as well, is, you know, celebrating everything. Like, every little step that you do is a big mm-hmm. deal. And I think so, I mean, to go 3 months without having a nighttime craving or giving into a nighttime craving, whatever it is, like mm-hmm. that is huge. 3 months. Yeah. Big deal.
No, right? It's been incredible. Yeah.
But then you have one night.
She hasn't had the craving. It's just that she's been working through them.
Working through them. Yeah.
Very similar to what you just talked about. And so it just took her by surprise when all of a sudden
she was eating.
Yeah. And it was the same with you. It was just like a perfect storm of, like, dealing with children, and, like, they were out and it was in the public, and it was just a lot going on for her. And it totally made sense. And so,
and this is also exactly the reason why you can't teach only the food, right? Exactly. I mean, if you just give someone a macro ratio to meet and say, like, have at it, right? You do this, you're going to be fine. And then you have that perfect storm of an evening with the kids and the fatigue and everything else. And you haven't been taught how to manage yourself around that. I mean, the macros are never going to be successful.
No. Yeah. I think that's like the hardest part sometimes when I get newer clients who, that's what they want. They want a macro plan, and they want to, like, you know, track how many carbs and all this stuff. And it's hard for me to, at first, just to, like, kind of bring them along, like, into the fold of sort of how I coach. And I mean, I'd be curious to know if how you describe that, like, if you do it right at the start of your coaching, or if your marketing speaks for itself so that clients know what to expect when they sign up with you. I think for the most part, I do that as well, but I do find, especially at the beginning, there's a bit of a trust there where clients are worried that if they let go of the tracking and the calorie counting and the macro counting, that they'll let go of everything, or that it won't work. So there's a trust before they start to see it working. And then I notice they let go, they start to be more calm. Yeah. But there's
I agree wholeheartedly on that. Mm-hmm. And I think my marketing and my messaging is quite clear that if you're wanting a diet plan or a macros ratio plan to follow, I am not your gal. I think I'm quite clear about that. And every once in a while, I'll get on a consult call with somebody who clearly communicates that they just want somebody to tell them what to eat and when to eat it and how much of it to eat, and then they'll be fine. And I'm like, that, I'm not your girl. Like, I'm sorry. And I'll try to do some teaching around why that's the case. But I think it takes a while for people to hear that message, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's just not what we've been told from, you know, the media and from the diet industry for decades, is mm-hmm. that, you know, if you want to lose weight, you've got to count something, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. right? And it becomes challenging. And I find, though, that it, you know, I'm thinking of one client in particular, and Michelle, if you're listening, I apologize, but I'm telling your story. But she signed up for my program and was counting macros when she signed up, and had been counting macros for quite some time. And she had started Weight Watchers with a parent when she was a young girl, and had sort of grown up mm-hmm. in this environment of always counting something, points or calories, and now macros. And she was terrified of letting it go. And I think it was my fitness pal had on her phone, and I made her take it off of her phone. And I'm like, just stick with me for a few months and let's see how you do. Mm-hmm. And she was terrified, and then still just trying to calculate macros in her head, you know, for a while as well. And then eventually she started realizing that she was feeling much better and also losing weight. And so then she was sold. And now it's like 6 months down the road, and she was out for dinner with a girlfriend who brought out her FitnessPal app to, they were out for dinner together, and she was analyzing the menu, trying to figure out what would fit in to her macro ratio. And that's really when Michelle realized that, you know, her whole outlook on all of this had really changed.
Like, and how far she'd actually had come.
Yeah. And then another tool that we teach is the 24-hour plan. And this is really when we decide ahead of time what we're going to eat for the following day. And there's many purposes for this. You know, one is just to start eliminating all of the mindless eating, you know, and the things that you just grab without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then to also start building some trust with yourself, to right. prove to yourself that, you know, you're the kind of woman that does what you say you're going to do for yourself. So, you know, a few reasons why we do this. And everybody is always so resistant towards doing this. And I say, you know, even just give it 1 week, just try it as an experiment for 1 week. And even the most reticent clients of mine are all over this concept of the 24-hour plan. Like, they feel that it actually brings them freedom, and that they spend 2 minutes in the morning planning their food, and they don't have to think about food all day long like they normally do. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing what happens when, and I love that word trust, when people just decide to trust this new way of doing things. And then they collect evidence for themselves that, you know, whoa, like this stuff really does work, even though it feels a little bit scary.
Yeah. I'm curious too, like, if you teach sort of, do you teach the hand portion method and like macros on a more of a broader sense, like what a protein dense food is, what a carbohydrate dense food is, what a fat dense food is, and teach them how to sort of build a balance plate from that kind of theory? Or is it more of, you know, as long as you're making a plan, you're more likely you're going to eliminate like 50% of the mindless eating.
I do teach the hand portions for sure. But I don't teach nutrition beyond that until later on. So what we try to do first is instill all of this, all of the other stuff, like to eliminate the mindless snacking, to become more aware of how they're eating currently. And then once they're comfortable with all of that, then we start looking at how to balance their meals in a healthier way. But I find when we do that part first, it just, and for my clients, the reason why most of them are overweight is because the emotional eating, the nighttime snacking, the snacking in between meals, the binging, alcohol in some instances as well. And so I feel like that is the more important piece. And so once they feel like they've made some wins in that area, then we start to look at balancing meals later. So we do it, but we just don't do it upfront.
I like what you said that about, like, with your clients. I think that's really the thing I'm realizing, or have realized over the last like year and a half, that coach, like, there's only going to be different approaches to like, you and I have very similar philosophies, and we might coach a little differently because we might have different clients that want to meet, like, we'll probably want to focus on different things at different times, like different limiting factors and different strengths. And so I think I like that idea of, in PM they talk about that quite a bit. But I think once you start coaching a similar type of client, then that starts to be more and more clear of like where to start, more or less.
Right. Agreed. And I think it all comes down to what people's goals are, right? Yeah. Because if you have somebody who's maybe just 10 or 20 pounds overweight, and, you know, their goals are, you know, really just to get fitter, to be healthier, then it might make more sense to start with portions and a balance plate and looking at that. And then, you know, many of my clients have struggled with weight for decades, have, you know, 60, 80, 100 pounds to lose, and will identify, you know, more emotional reasons for why they've gained that weight and why they're struggling to keep it off. And right. and I, my feeling is, because I'm that same type of woman, and that if you tell me how to balance a plate properly, I'm going to be, well, okay, well, yeah, that's great. But you try telling my very like anxious, stressed, overwhelmed, you know, brain that that's what I need to do, when the only thing I can think about is eating chocolate to calm me the hell down.
Right.
Right. And so
totally useless at that point.
Exactly. But you get to a point then where you do solve that issue. And now what? Right. And so then you do have to teach nutrition. Right. Yeah. And so I, you know how precision nutrition teaches red light, yellow light, green light foods. Mm-hmm. I teach it in a different way. And I use it. So if you look at, you know, red light foods as being like totally processed, unhealthy, you know, full of sugar, you know, sort of stuff, a yellow light food is, how are you going to make it just a little bit better? Mm-hmm. And so that might mean eating ice cream out of a bowl instead of a carton, right? For instance, or that might mean getting thin crust pizza instead of regular crust pizza, just like one small upgrade, right?
Turning that dial, that continuum. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And then a green light is, you know, turning that dial just a little bit farther. So, you know, maybe instead of having ice cream, you have a piece of fruit for the sweet, or, you know, maybe instead of the pizza, you order a salad with a side of protein instead. Right.
Right.
But it just has to be this gentle improvement.
Yeah. I love that too. And making the plan, like making their 24 hour plan with that in mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And not having it have to be like green light foods all the way through if they're not, if they don't feel like confident.
No.
And if they can follow that.
If you take somebody who's been, and that's the other thing, is like 24 hour plans have to be totally realistic and doable. You have to look at your 24 hour plan and say, I am 100% ready, willing, and able to eat this plan today. And if you're not, then you've got to look at changing it. And people will like look at me all of the time with like googly eyes. Like, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? If you have a cup of coffee and four cookies every day at 3 o'clock, we're not going to change that right away. So I want you to plan your cup of coffee and four cookies for 3 o'clock today. And then maybe next week, if you're feeling really good, we're going to change that from a cup of coffee and three cookies. And we're going to see how that goes. Right. And it takes a while to get there. But then the thing is maybe just now they're just having their coffee and cookies Friday afternoon and that's it. And they feel totally okay with that because we've just done this gradual thing and they've built confidence around that all of the time.
Right. That sort of evolution of I can do this. Yeah. I think as the actions, as they start sticking to that plan, like you said, the thoughts about themselves, about their ability to just follow through, start to change. And then when those thoughts start to change, it snowballs.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I love about the 24-hour plan is, you know, we have to teach a lot around it, is if you eat off your 24-hour plan, totally fine. In fact, get excited, because now we have some data to work with. We get to look at what happened. Why? Like, what were you feeling? What were the circumstances? Who were you with? What time of day was it? Right. And if you collect enough of these, then you start to realize, oh gosh, you know what? I am also, I'm always eating off plan at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, what's going on? Now we have something that we can actually troubleshoot and look at.
Yes.
Right. Or it's like, I notice that every time I get off the phone with my mother, I go and have a snack. Right. And then like, we know, like we've got something to work with. And sometimes these things just don't actually seem obvious until you start looking for them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the huge benefit of having a coach. Like, you just
100%.
When you don't have a coach to like ask you those things, I mean, you could do it yourself. It's just often where we don't see it. And so when you have a coach to ask you, and then you're walking through it and you're collecting that data together, it becomes really obvious. And you're like, oh, I should have seen that before. But for some reason, because I'm in my own brain, I just didn't notice it. And because you're always like, your brain's so busy judging you.
Exactly.
Saying that you're doing the wrong thing. You're not able to get curious about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a coach really just functions to hold up the mirror for people a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And the difference between a coach, I think sometimes some people come and they want a consultant, like somebody to tell them what to do. And so it takes a little while for me, at least sometimes, to explain to people that that's not what the role of a coach is necessarily. Like, there is some of that if they want it, but like also, like you said, to hold up that mirror and help empower them to make that change from within.
Yeah. There has to be space for teaching, I think, in coaching too, but the coaching bit is so important because I think, you know, that's what gives clients the tools to understand how to look at their lives.
Yeah.
Right.
And going forward,
just
even
give them the
so
tools. Exactly.
Needing, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't need somebody there all the time to help them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I love the way that you've bridged the PN practices with else, like the life coach certification as well.
Yeah, no, I think both pieces are essential. And my true belief is one isn't going to work as well without the other, without the other present, honestly. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's why things really changed for me with precision nutrition. It wasn't because of the nutrition stuff I learned. It was because of the coaching piece of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And life changing, totally life changing.
Yes.
And I get irritated sometimes. What were we watching? Oh, Heartland. Have you ever watched this show?
I've seen it.
You've
on
seen
TV
it?
A few times. Yeah.
It's this, you know, Canadian horse show that is filmed nearby where I live. And I hadn't ever really watched it, but it was on Netflix. And I started watching it. And there was this one episode where a movie star comes to the ranch to learn how to ride horses for a role. And she is totally entitled and snobby and, you know, the whole stereotypical persona of a movie star. And as she's driving away, leaving like this total wreckage behind her, she unrolls the window and says, "I can't talk. Like, I've got my life coach on the phone." And it just gave this whole, this very specific image of who life coaching is for. And it's just so not the case. Like, coaching is such a powerful tool.
It really is.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, now that I've been exposed to it, and realized the power of it, like that power of having that mirror held up to you. Finding my own coach has been really important to me.
Yes. Agreed.
And to me, it's one of the most valuable investments that I could make.
100%. And I even have, like, I have a life coach, I'm in Corinne Crabtree's group. Like, she's my personal weight loss coach, but I also have a life coach that I just talk about everything else. And I don't think I could ever not have one anymore. It's just been, so powerful to have this space to, explore my own shit and to actually, like, no longer accept my shit as my shit. It's like, I've got to let that go now.
Well, and it's so exciting because you get to, you're actively evolving yourself when you talk to them. Like, you're actively processing stuff, but it's not like they're a therapist where you're just like processing old wounds. I feel like a coach is so exciting because they're like, how do you want to change? What do you like? What is a goal that you have? Where are you now? Like, let's bridge that gap. What do we need to do to bridge that gap? And that's, to me, when I used to, like, in the past, when I was having more anxiety and stuff, I went to a therapist, and not that they was so valuable, but I think what I actually really needed was a coach. And I didn't know that. Like, I was so lost in my career. This is when I was doing my master's, like, not enjoying my master's. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know. I needed a coach to, like, be like, what do you want? And how do we get you there? Like, the therapy wasn't really what I needed. So it's interesting in hindsight seeing that. And wishing now that I could have had a coach in my 20s. Like, that would have been amazing.
Oh, I know, right? I can't tell you how many times that I wish I had a coach when. Things would have turned out so differently for me. But
it sounds like they turned out really good. So maybe it was all meant to be. But,
right? I think you're right. We did get there. Definitely got there. But you raise a good point of, I don't think it matters what your goal is when you come to nutrition coaching. The coaching piece is essential. Like, whether, like, if you're an athlete who's training for some event, I mean, you definitely need, you know, coaching around that. You're just going to have a different set of challenges than somebody who needs coaching because of emotional eating, right? And if you want to look at how you're feeding your body to, you know, mitigate risks of early onset dementia, you know, for you, for example, you know, there's a different set of challenges around that coaching can be helpful for. So I think the educational piece of, you know, teaching people how to eat to reach their goals, one important step, but I think without the coaching on how to actually implement that and how to navigate the challenge and obstacles that are going to come up when you change the way that you're eating, regardless of what your goal is, the coaching piece is crucial for actually getting you to the point where you can commit to the changes to your nutrition that you want to do.
Yeah. I had a colleague talk about it. It makes so much sense. If it's like you're at the bowling alley and you want to get your ball to the strike zone, or you want to get your ball to the end of that bowling alley, that's coaching is like the bumpers. The rails, right?
Oh my gosh, so I love that.
When you're trying to make a big change or trying to transform in some way, it is hard. We're going against all those pickles like in our brain, and we're trying to create new ones, but it's really difficult when life just is coming at us. And so with having a coach, it creates those bumper rails so that every time you get off track, you kind of hit the edge and then they get you back on track. And then you hit another edge and they get you back on track, and they just keep you going and focused on that one goal.
I love that analogy for so many reasons, right? Like, cause first, like the bumpers are there, like they're there. I don't care what goal you're chasing, there's going to be bumpers there. And without somebody to steer you back into the lane, you're going to go totally off in left field. Like I watch this with weight loss women all of the time. Like when they hit a bumper, it always goes one of two ways. They either decide to like double down and they go like the all or nothing, all in, right? Mm-hmm. Which we all know is not sustainable for very long. Or they beat themselves up so hard that they just quit, right? Coaching gently steers you right back into the lane. Yeah. And then the other thing that I love about that analogy is it's like, unless you're like a total professional bowler, the ball never goes straight down the plane, right? Like for most of us, it's this zigzaggy up and down path all the way to our goals, right? Yes. And coaching kind of just gives these softer edges, I think.
And I think it allows you to think about how you want to approach the goal too. So like you said, that all or nothing, or even if somebody had like a financial goal and they were like going to do it themselves and their head was down and they were super focused, they might never have the opportunity to be like, is this how I actually want to do it? Like, do I want to just be miserable and like head down? Or because I'm thinking in my head that there's no way I could reach a financial goal and still hang out with my friends, or reach a weight loss goal and still be social with my family.
Exactly.
Whereas a coach is like, no. Like, we can do this. Like, is this how you want to do it? And help you set it up so you actually enjoy the journey more.
Love it. And that's why my tagline is losing weight with joy and confidence, because it doesn't have to be about suffering. And, you know, the other thing that I love about coaching is, you know, we always talk about this act as if, right? And it's so many women who are in bigger bodies and want to be in smaller bodies think that their life can't really start until they're in that smaller body. So they're not going to date. They're not going to go for their promotion at work. They're not going to take a beach vacation. They're not going to do whatever it is until they've lost their weight. And, you know, coaching tools really teach you. It's like, what do you want? What do you want for your life? And let's get it right now. Like, let's take steps to do that right now. So let's work on your weight loss and let's get you dating. Let's work on your weight loss and let's coach you through that promotion at work, right? And
I love
it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be this, you know, nothing can happen until weight loss, right? Totally. And it's the same thing with your financial goal example. It's like, yeah, you are probably going to have to sacrifice some things to save XYZ. But if you have a coach there to help you prioritize, like what's really important to you, and maybe it means that it takes a little bit longer for you to save whatever your goal is to save, but then you'll be so much happier along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, even just being able to articulate what your goal is, I think sometimes what we want is so vague and like,
I know,
up there, we don't take the time to sit down. And a coach, I think one of my favorite things is at the beginning of a client relationship and pulling that out of clients of like, what is it that you want? What does that look like? How would you know that you're there? Like if you snapped your fingers tomorrow and it happened, how would your life be different? That is like, we don't do that with ourselves very often.
No, we don't. So no, we
even
don't.
Even that is powerful.
Oh, I know. And it's crazy how when clients first come into the Nourish Yourself program, we go through this whole exercise to identify, we call it your why power, like why you actually want to lose weight. And I would say 9 times out of 10, they don't know. They don't know. They've been trying to lose weight for so long and they don't even remember why they started in the first place. And things really change. And also 9 times out of 10, women come to the conclusion it's not actually the weight loss that they want. It's some other thing that they think they can't have unless they lose the weight.
Right.
Right. Which
I see that with all different sizes of women too. Like
so true. Not, oh yeah.
I've seen women very, very small, the same mindset. And it's
so true. Yeah. Well, and that just illustrates even more the point of why we need to teach people to live the life they want right now, regardless of what their current circumstances are. Because even if you lose 100 pounds, you're still going to find things to hate about your body.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just the way we are. Like it's hard to find any woman of any size who loves their body fully. Right. We all just want to change something. And so if you can look at what you think changing your body is going to accomplish for you and then work on getting that thing.
Right.
As a separate piece from working on your body, it's right. a really big mindset shift.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's so powerful. I feel like that comes a lot from the life coach school, more like working on that separate piece. Do you feel like after doing your certification through LCS that you feel a bit more able to help women with those other things, like those more general life things?
Oh gosh, like so much. Yeah. But again, I think that comes back to the type of women that I like to coach, right? And they're just women who have chosen food as their way to buffer, right? And so we almost have to coach on everything else going on in their lives to get some clarity around that piece, right? Yeah. So I think the life coaching bit is the crucial piece for my type of client.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's sometimes I see that even in PN right now, like because I'm redoing it so that I can become certified through the National Board of Wellness Coaches. So I see that where a lot of times it's like personal trainers, and I can tell there's a discomfort there to get into more of the life coaching things.
Sure.
Because they're not really, that's not their thing typically. Like they typically are there to work with clients on fitness, and then nutrition is like a side piece. And that's cool too. Like that's just a different approach. So it's just interesting because I'm more about like, I like to help people to process emotions, to figure out why they want the weight loss they want. And no, I don't do fitness. So it's just a different aspect of it. And I think clients just get to decide what they really want to work on and what they need. And so it's like, not like a one coach for everybody. It's like there's so many different coaches,
right?
You really need to do your research on what you want. And
exactly. They're so true. And in fact, just ironically, I used to be a runner many, many years ago, and I recently decided I was going to take it up again. So I've joined this group called Not Your Average Runner, and it is this coaching community for women in bigger bodies who want to run. And so she has, you know, all sorts of different running programs inside this community, like to help you reach whatever goal that you're wanting. And then there's also just these coaching calls where you can bring anything that you need to the coaching call. And she's a life coach school coach as well. Oh. And so it's like I can come to these calls saying, I am so embarrassed to be outside running in my fat body. Like, I can't stop thinking about what people are thinking when they watch me run. Right. And she'll coach me around that. Or, and anything, right? And like, I'm doing a race with Corinne Crabtree's group in Nashville in a few weeks. And she has arranged this race by time instead of distance. And it has just taken all of the pressure off of me. So you choose to run for 1 hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, and that's it. They blow a whistle at the half point time and you turn around and come back, and it doesn't matter how far you actually go. And it's like amazing to me just how changing that one little thing from distance to time totally made running a race again feel doable for me. Wow. Right? And that wouldn't have ever existed without coaches out there looking at doing things a different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. Oh, you're going to go to Nashville.
I know. I'm so excited. We're going to run a race and then we're going to do some honky tonkin. And I'm really excited.
How many are you, like, are you going to actually get to meet Corinne? Have you?
I've met her a few times. Met her a few times, but yeah, she will be there. She's emceeing the whole event. So
she's hilarious.
And
oh my
I know, and knowing her, it's going to be absolutely fabulous. I cannot wait.
That's
Jolene, this has been such an amazing conversation. I mean, we had the pickles and the waves and the bowling alleys and everything in there. I loved it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Yeah. Before we sign off, are there any last words of wisdom that you'd like to share with listeners?
Oh, man. Last words of wisdom. I think, you know, one of the things I've noticed about this journey of like weight loss and getting healthy is finding the good in why you have to do this journey. And what I mean by that is when you learn these skills, when you start practicing these skills, how they are then so powerful for the rest of your life. So for me, for example, when I learned that one of the reasons why I was probably overeating was I was not paying attention. I was completely mindlessly doing it. I realized how many other things in my life I do distractedly, and why I often don't get results is because I'm doing 1,000 different things with no focus. So for me, the practice of eating with focus, with intention, and with mindfulness is starting to go trickle into other areas of my life. And I am more efficient. I get more things done. I feel more clear. It's like, oh, okay, this one lesson with eating actually was the lesson I needed for everything else. And so I think there's a beauty in that. And if we can kind of not, you know, be hard on ourselves, but really see on how the benefit of all these practices and where this is our sort of thing that we're supposed to be learning, then we can kind of enjoy that process more.
I love it. That is brilliant. I feel like this call has been a love letter to coaching. Which, you know, coaching deserves all the love, I think.
Yeah, and so,
Jolene, if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram at Jolene Hermanson Coaching. And then my website is jolenehermanson.com. And I'm on Facebook at Jolene Hermanson Coaching too.
Perfect. And I'll make sure all of that is in the show notes below as well.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, Jolene, so much for joining us. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. It was such a pleasure to talk to not just a fellow Canadian, but also someone certified in precision nutrition, which I think is just one of the most reputable places to go for nutrition information. So if you're looking for more information about PN and what they offer, just head over to their website at precisionnutrition.com. And please also check the show notes for how to find Jolene Hermanson and all of the valuable information that she has to share with you. Of course, we talk about all of this inside programming at Ways of Health as well. And if you want to learn more about that, you just head on over to us on Instagram, Facebook, or our website, waysofhealth.com, and we'll be happy to share with you anything that you need to know. Until next week, have a good one.